We are back at it.
My responsibility is to make this place great again.
Champions of the Big 12.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, I've kind of upgraded my backdrop here. Oklahoma State football did not upgrade their winning prowess through one game this year, but I've updated my look here, got my old credentials, got the old Fiesta Bowl football. I covered that game out there in 2011, helmet. So we're looking a little bit more professional. Trying to get ready for Oregon. Trying to look better than we did in week one.
Yeah, look sharp. Looks really sharp. I'm gonna have to up my game. It's funny. I actually have I'm looking at a picture of Barry Sanders on my wall. I've got a couple other things around the house. And why don't I just take those and put them behind me? It would be the easiest thing in the world. Haven't gotten around to it yet. How about this? When Oklahoma State wins a game, then Barry Sanders will pop up behind me on the screen. How's that?
Love it. Right now, it kind of looks like you're being in a holding cell somewhere. You're in an interrogation room right against the dark wall there.
Well, the picture that did hang behind me was this Tiger Woods picture, which is this huge headshot. It says you can always become better. It's an old quote of his. But the way I sit, it looks like my head is running up into his neck, and then his head is sprouting out of my head. So then it looked kind of ridiculous the way I sit in front of that picture. Take it off the wall to record the pod. And then, yes, it just is a very, very plain background. I try to wear some bright orange and the bright hat to brighten up the shot a little bit.
Yep, love it. We're a work in progress, just like the Cowboys. We got a lot to get to. We are live here tonight on YouTube. If you're audio listeners, we are going to have some visual elements here tonight. We've done a lot of soul searching after the Tulsa game. And I guess, I probably didn't come out and say it strong enough of how wrong I was, essentially, of them, picking to win 10 games. But as we'll discuss, Colby, if you go back and watch the actual game against Tulsa itself, besides the situational football that, you and I discussed, when you don't convert, when you have long scoring drives, that typically is when games get away from you, just like it did. But Drew Mestemaker, missing some of the throws he missed, which we'll get into. If you had that, if you predicted that they were going to – Drew Mestemaker was going to miss wide open wide receivers, good on you. But we have a lot to get to tonight. But first, this show is brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. All day, every day, free standard shipping on orders over $75. You know Chris's out there on South Knobloch Street there in Stilly. It's going to be an action-packed weekend in Stillwater with the Oregon Ducks coming to town. We've been wanted to see an Oregon versus Oklahoma State matchup with the uniforms and all of those things. They played Oregon out in the Holiday Bowl once upon a time, but never in the regular season, at least in Stillwater. So get to Chris's if you're there this weekend. We appreciate them sponsoring the show as always. Colby, not sure where to start other than you're a glutton for punishment. You decided to rewatch the game. I watched enough. I didn't go through every single play, but I watched, kind of the key spots and things like that. So I guess let's start there. Let's kind of put a bow on the Tulsa fallout, the Tulsa calamity, if you will. What stood out to you most?
Yeah, the main thing I was looking for was the stuff on offense. I rewatched every offensive snap up until Tulsa went up 24-10, 7:52 in the fourth quarter is when I turned it off. So anything that happened after 7:52 in the fourth quarter, I did not rewatch for a second time. Tulsa was up 24-10. I knew that was the final. I didn't need to see anything from there on. Everything was decided by that point. So I really wanted to see Eric Morris, the offensive genius at North Texas. Where did it go? Where can blame be laid? Where were the failures from Eric Morris as an offensive coach and as a play caller? And where were the failures from the guys on the field? And I found plenty of both, Carson. Number one, you watch that North Texas team. They were good about using motion last year, getting guys working across the formation, making defenses defend the entirety of the field, like we've talked about. We didn't see a lot of that on Saturday with Oklahoma State. Carson, if I were to ask you, and again, this excludes the final 7:52 of the fourth quarter, so up until that point, how many times do you think Oklahoma State took a skill player, not a tight end, motioning from fullback to tight end, from, you know, right tight end to left tight end. How many times did Oklahoma State take a skill player and motion them from one side of the formation to the other pre-snap?
I mean, it wasn't a lot. If I had to guess, I would say 4.
Okay, you are about quadruple what the actual number is. They did it one time with Miles Coleman with about 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. Miles Coleman starts wide right, motions left. Once he gets left of Mestemaker and Hawkins, Mestemaker takes the snap. First read's not there. Second read's not there. Checks it down to guess who? The motion man, Miles Coleman, who was mostly unaccounted for in the flat, catches, runs for 14 yards on the edge. That was the one time up until that 8-minute mark of the fourth quarter that I saw a skill guy come in motion across the formation. And Carson, I really don't know how many years I'm going to have to sit here and talk about that being an issue. People know how I feel about it. The amount of football I watch, the amount of good football that, I mean, I love the NFL. I love the way it's covered, the way it's broken down. I feel like I can really learn something from the X's and O's there. And so I've watched so much McVay film over the last 5 years. I've watched so much McDaniel film over the last 5 years. And Carson, I thought that we were getting a McVay McDaniel type, and I'm not ready to say that we weren't. Maybe Eric Morris, the offensive genius, makes an appearance at some point in this 2026 season. But I thought that we were going to see a whole bunch more Mike McDaniel in week one, and we saw a whole lot of Casey Dunn. So I was pretty disappointed with a lot of the scheme stuff on the rewatch.
It looked like Casey Dunn had the sticks still. It really did. And I'm so glad you brought up Mike McDaniel, because I've been meaning to bring that up. He has led the NFL in pre-snap motion, and lo and behold, he's had the best offenses the last couple of years, certainly with rushing the football as well. It helps your offensive line with all that. You know, Lincoln Riley made that a hallmark with Hollywood Brown going across the line. It just frees up so much of the offense, and I'm totally with you. And I guess for me, the number one thing besides that, I think what you just called out, I think that speaks to my point in our post-game show, Colby. I think Eric Morris came into this game way overconfident. He thought he could just roll his offense and his players that he had last year out there. He's thinking, I already whooped up on Tulsa last year, North Texas. Now I'm at OSU with, you know, even more enhanced, you know, skill sets or skill players and even more enhanced roster, so to speak. And so I think the pre-snap motion or lack thereof speaks to that point that he thought, let's just get past Tulsa, keep all of our best plays in our hip pocket when we play Oregon. I don't think there's any other way to look at that. And perhaps my biggest takeaway, and I should have hammered this more in our post game, is this Tulsa game for me was a win for continuity, was a win for carrying your roster over year moving forward, if you can. By all intents and purposes, 80% of Tulsa's roster returned. And what did you see? You saw a team that played complementary football, that was sound, that knew what was expected of them with every play call. And this is where I perhaps underestimated or probably overestimated OSU's prowess offensively, is that these guys haven't played a ton of football. They do have 91 players. And I think that's probably where I was probably most wrong and overlooking that factor there, when looking at Tulsa. This is a team that played a lot of games together. Yeah, they went 4-8. But going through that and bringing 80% of your roster back, they really kicked OSU's teeth in, and they looked like they knew what they were doing. Whereas you can look at OSU and you struggle to find one area they played well.
And it really was the situational stuff, in addition to the next guy that I'm going to talk about, which is Drew Mestemaker. You know, I was able to listen to the first bit of the reload guys earlier, and Nathan said that he counted 8 bad throws from Mestemaker. There were a few that I was probably a little bit more lenient with my grading on, not knowing what the route was supposed to be, not knowing what the protection was supposed to be. So I was probably a little more lenient, but I counted 4 that were pretty tough from Mestemaker, and really throws that could have kept drives going, throws that could have gotten you into Tulsa's territory, throws that could have prevented ensuing disaster. So way wide on a quick out to Boak on the second drive of the game. I mean, it's an easy, should have been an easy 1st and 10, should have been a 15-yard gain probably, and he just airmails it. And that became a theme. 2 plays later, after they convert the 3rd and 5, 15-yard out to Carson Cobb, he's wide open. This is going into a commercial break, but people will probably remember it, to the right side, airmails him. Just way wide, way out into the sideline. Total safe throw. Wasn't going to miss on the inside, so he missed 15 yards to the outside. first play of the third drive. So all these early in the game, Terrence Lewis wins on a 12-yard out. And again, Mestemaker throws it into the bench. And Carson, those three throws, all on the second and third drive of the game, like those three misses were all probably in a span of about six dropbacks for Mestemaker. That to me screamed a quarterback. And this is where I almost would look at it as a point of optimism that maybe it will get better. It looked to me like a guy who was really nervous in his first game at Oklahoma State. You have to remember, he played his entire season last year at North Texas. He came in with zero hype and zero expectations. As the season rolled on, it started to build a little bit, but then you're already midseason. You're already rolling. The offense is flowing. The chemistry is there. He comes into this season, all the hype, all the expectations, and I think he played like someone who was incredibly, incredibly nervous in week one. I mean, those are routine throws with guys who are wide open, and that has to be tough for Morris to know that in those moments, he schemed guys open. And so at that point, after those three misses, Drew Mestemaker was 7 of 13. I've got it here. He was 7 of 13 for 40 yards after those three throws. He should have been 10 of 13 for about 80 yards at that point. And you would have had multiple drives get extended into Tulsa territory to give you a chance to potentially put points on the board. So I thought he looked incredibly nervous and really kind of crumbled under the weight of the pressure that was placed on him in the offseason. Now, I would hope that he's able to overcome that as the season goes along, that he gets more and more comfortable in his role and that he bounces back from that. But before you address that, the last one that I wanted to throw out there, first play of the third quarter, you come out right out of the locker room. You send Caleb Hawkins out wide left. He gets lined up on a matched up on a linebacker. And what does he do? He absolutely roasts him down the sideline. And Drew Mestemaker just has to put the ball out in front of him. He's not going to score because the safety's coming over the top, but it's going to be probably a 30-yard gain. Mestemaker underthrows him. Linebacker gets his hand on it and deflects it. You know, great play by the linebacker to catch up, but the ball's underthrown. You know what happens two plays later, Carson? Blitz gets to Mestemaker. He puts the ball on the ground. Tulsa falls on it, and the defense is on their heels again. So, like, these are big moments in the game when things could have gone really positively for Oklahoma State, and four different times Mestemaker missed on four throws that a guy his caliber just has to make. So, I guess we're just chalking the inaccuracy up to nerves. It's really the only thing I can think of right out of the gate in game one.
Yeah, it has to be. And I will give a little bit of credence to the fact that he lost his – blindside left tackle six plays into a snapped leg. That has to play some level of mind games with you when you've been pressured. Like, I think Tulsa had like 10 hurries, two sacks. So he was pretty much under duress for a lot of that game. And I also think he held onto the ball way too long too. But what you're speaking about, and Nathan Gilslider said he missed eight throws, and I didn't go back and chart it, but I'll take his word for it. And that to me, like, you're not going to win against anybody if your $3.5 million quarterback, who everyone's talking about going in the first round, can't hit a wide open receiver. And that's before you even get into the fact that they didn't throw it once over the middle, very few shots downfield at all. Only their longest completion of the day was 27 yards, and that was late in the game. So yeah, like, I hope it's nerves. I hope it's not the fact that Drew Mestemaker was a flash in the pan against a lower level and can't compete, but he's playing against Tulsa. He lit up Tulsa last year. So that's why it's so, again, like, if you want to make fun of me for picking OSU to win 10 games, that's fine. I was a little bit on a limb there, and it got made to look stupid thanks to how poorly OSU played. But I tweeted this after the game. I said, like, is OSU going to play this bad the rest of the year? Probably not. Is their offensive line going to get a whole lot better? Probably not. But are they going to look as bad as against Tulsa? Probably not. You know, like, it looked really bad for all the things you and I have just discussed. The situational football. I think you're going to get to the fourth downs here next, and I want to hear more about those, because that to me is that swung the entire game. Because really, when you factor in the turnovers on downs, Colby, they had like seven turnovers. Like, you're not going to beat a high school team turning it over seven times.
It was a disaster from a situational football standpoint. Let's get to the fourth downs, and I'll just kind of rattle through what I saw and then give a quick take, and then you can get your take on the general gist of the fourth down. So the first drive, you know, we talked on Saturday that a lot of them were like quick snaps. They weren't all quick snaps. I went back and watched it. The first drive, fourth and one down at the Tulsa 3-4 yard line. This was after a Tulsa timeout. So you had time in a timeout to scheme something up from fourth and one. It was Hawkins off left guard, and he just got stuffed. They motioned a tight end across the formation to take out the backside rusher. It didn't work. You know, Nathan talked about this on the reload as well. That play works if the left guard doesn't get blown up. So you can blame execution on that if you want to. Here's the problem I have with blaming execution there. You had one receiver split out wide. A corner went with him. Tulsa had the other 10 guys all within 2-3 yards of the line of scrimmage, all selling out to fill every gap, all dialed in on Caleb Hawkins, every last one of them. I promise, I know what Trey Lamb told him in the timeout. If they go play action, we're beat. We're stopping the run. And that's exactly what they did. You want to know why? It was 10-on-8. You've got Mestermaker handing the ball off. He's not blocking. You got Hawkins carrying the ball. He's not blocking. You got a receiver out wide. That's three. You got 10 guys in the box for Tulsa on 8 blockers. I can run through the rest of them quicker than this one, but I actually think that this one maybe most drove me the most insane. It's a 10-on-8, Carson. It's a math problem, and you don't have your left tackle out there. You're not some physical force that's throwing Tulsa around. It's early in the game. I think if you've got a $3 million quarterback, I think you go play action there and let him make a decision, give him two options, a tight end leaking out in the back of the end zone, and maybe a receiver going out in the flat. Something that is more of an option than, hey, maybe my 8 guys can block your 10 who are all selling out to stop the run. I thought that was really poor from Morris after a timeout.
And that's like a decision we would have seen the last 2 years too. That's the most discouraging part. It's like, that's where Mike Gundy says, well, you got to be able to run the ball. My left guard should have blocked him. Well, your left guard hadn't blocked him all day. What makes you think it's going to happen when they're expecting the 1 yard handoff? And so, yeah, it's frustrating. And I do think they're going to take an honest assessment of this. I think Eric Morris has said all the right things this week. We haven't discussed that a ton yet, but look, he's owned this. He's come out and said how poorly they played, how poorly they coached, and really that was obvious. I mean, Tulsa significantly outcoached them, and that's a great example, the example you just gave. And so another thing that stood out to me, and you were texting me about this, like, this is the NIL era. These aren't just college kids just, you know, going to school anymore. I don't want to see any more, like I say anymore, one of my biggest issues with the Casey Dunn, Mike Gundy offense was this infatuation with cowboy backs and these tight ends that they think can block as if they're offensive linemen.
We've got to
they
talk.
Can't block. They can't block worth a. I don't even want to say it. I want to swear for our younger audience. They can't block worth a damn. How about that? You know, beavers build dams. When I said damn the other day, one of our youngest girls was like, did you just cuss? I was like, no, beavers build dams. That's what I was saying. You can't block with a dam, Colby. And Carson Cobb, the tight end, cowboy back, if we're still calling them cowboy backs, I don't know. But he had one of the lowest PFF grades in the entire country. He got single-handedly blown up on multiple fourth down, short yardage situations. And so I just hope that I thought this was going to be a thing of the past that I wouldn't have to talk on this podcast again, but that is not air raid football. That is not OSU football. These cowboy backs hinder your offense. They do not help them. And if you're not going to throw the football to them, get them the hell out of there and put an offensive lineman in, because it's blowing up your entire offense. And that was one of the bigger takeaways I had.
Yeah, Carson Cobb was rated out at 46.3 on Pro Football Focus, and I don't want this to turn into the bash Carson Cobb hour. He's not some guy who's making $1.5 million, $2 million.
It's not a Carson Cobb thing. It's a scheme thing for me.
Yeah, you've got a guy out there who's a little bit lighter to me. So the fourth down of the game, 10 minutes to go, third quarter, fourth and about a half yard from the Tulsa 41. So you're really fast rushing to the line. It's a quick snap. Just boom, 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 go, go, go. Iowa Day is on the field. So now you're at your third running back on the field for a fourth and one. The third fourth down of the game was run by Trey Page. That was the one where he fumbled. That one was blocked okay enough that he was going to have the first down if he held onto the ball. He didn't. Again, situational football. Hang on to the ball. You know, he didn't play much after that, and rightfully so. That's a big swing point in that game. Hang on to the ball. But this one in the third quarter, I want to try to give Carson Cobb the benefit of the doubt, because Coach Morris mentioned on Monday or Tuesday in his presser that there was a fourth down where they missed an assignment on the right side of the line and they blocked the wrong guys. Now, I hope the one that he was talking about was the fourth down from Ayo Adeyi, where they tried to run off right tackle. Right tackle dives down inside, so the right defensive end basically just splits between the right tackle and Carson Cobb, who was lined up just on the right tackle's hip, and basically uses his left shoulder to throw Carson Cobb into the back wall of the stadium, and then tackles Ayo Adeyi for a half-yard loss, and you're off the field again. So that was one instance, and again, I want to give Cobb the benefit of the doubt there that the wrong guy was blocked, the right tackle was supposed to go right, and the right tackle went left. If that was the case, then I can somewhat let him off the hook there if he was caught on his heels, because that wasn't his assignment. Sure. The one that I can't get past, and the one that makes me wonder what the assignment was on the Adeyi rush, was the quick out to Coleman, and they rushed to the line again. This is 8:45 to go in the fourth quarter, 4th and 1, you're down 17-10 at your own 34. Carson, you talk about a seriously key moment in the game, and this is a massive failure by Eric Morris. You take your time here to get the right play in. You take your time to have the right personnel on the field. You can even take a timeout here if you need to take a timeout here, because it's 4th and 1, less than 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. You're inside your own 35. You're down by a touchdown. You've got to convert this, or you're giving them the ball, chance to go up by 10 or 14 late in the game. You're going to have a hard time winning the game at that point. What do they do instead? They sprint to the line in 3 seconds. We got to go, baby. We got to go right now. We got to catch them off guard. And they throw the quick out to Coleman a couple yards behind the line of scrimmage on the left side. Carson, the lead blocker on that play was Carson Cobb, and he wasn't getting trucked by a defensive end that time. It was a safety who was jetting down on the play to come get Miles Coleman. And I texted you and I said, if you ever wondered what I would look like trying to block on a Division I football field, go watch that 4th and 1 play where Miles Coleman goes and tries to get the first down. I mean, the safety just comes down and absolutely bodies him and gets Coleman behind the line. So it's a failure by Cobb to pick up the block, obviously. But again, I go back to Cobb's not making $1 million. Cobb is being put in these situations, these positions, by a guy who's making $3.5 million, by a guy who was brought in to make the correct decisions in these moments. We talk about nerves from Estimaker. Maybe there was some of that for Morris too, because to put Carson Cobb in that situation, to run that play so quickly, to not take your time to make sure your personnel and your play is absolutely dialed on what ended up probably being one of the single most key plays of the entire game. Tulsa takes over at that point. They go score. Ball game is over. I thought the decision to rush to the line and to not take your time on a significant deciding play in that game, I didn't understand what they were doing there. So I understand trying to catch the defense off guard. I also understand when there are really key moments in the game that you need to be dialed and have your absolute best play drawn up. And slinging it 25 yards sideways to Miles Coleman with Carson Cobb as the lead blocker and doing that all in 3 seconds, it clearly wasn't it.
To the short side of the field as well. And I don't know about you, but that to me was like a white flag moment. It was like, we cannot run block to get a yard or two. We just can't. And that to me was a white flag moment. And so again, I think we do need to turn the page from Tulsa. It was a disaster, coaching, execution, all the way top to bottom. How much of this can really change against Oregon? I think is the ultimate question here. Oregon, this is just another example of OSU. Like, just, I feel like this would only happen to OSU. Oregon beats Boise State at home. They look, as the national pundits put it, lethargic is how they put it. I mean, they still beat who I think is a very good Boise State team. And they get dropped from number 2 in the country to number 6. So now OSU is not playing the second-ranked team in the country, even though they should be. They played a much tougher game than everyone that was moved ahead of them in the polls. Just one of my bigger pet peeves is, they schedule a game, it's hard fought, and they beat a good team, and they drop, whereas other teams are playing a bunch of cream puffs. So, Colby, how much do you think will change against Oregon? I watched a decent amount of Oregon and Boise on the rewatch, and I have some plays to show here in just a second that I think, if you're an OSU fan, like, how can they move the ball if the offensive line cannot block? I think it's one of the bigger questions looming from the Tulsa game is, Your offensive line looked as bad as it has the last 3 years. How much can – that was like the common comment I got was, well, what's Drew Mestemaker and Eric Morris supposed to do if they can't block? Well, I have some examples here from Oregon, but before we get to those, how much of this can really change in 1 week in that scenario? Do you think they were holding a lot back for Oregon, or do you think this was just a case of they just kind of panicked a little bit against Tulsa?
Probably some of both. I think they thought they might be able to hold some back, and then they realized they were getting punched in the mouth, and then it was too late, and they crumbled. You had me going in the first half there. You said, how much of this can really change? And I had an order prepared, and then you finished your sentence and said, against Oregon, and that's a very different answer. How much of this can change between now and that trip to Morgantown? Like, I mean, that's a few weeks in between. That's with a lot of hard lessons that I think are going to be learned in Boone Pickens Stadium on Saturday. And then you should be able to work on some things. And I don't care what Tulsa looked like. You're going to beat Murray State by 40. So you should be able to work against on some things against Murray State. So I think it can look different by the time you get to Morgantown. I think you can have a team playing with better chemistry, better situational football, a coach and a quarterback who don't look nervous and totally out of character for everything that we watched last year at North Texas. I think those things can change between now and Morgantown. I don't know that we're going to see those changes between now and Oregon. Oregon is just, Carson, they're too good. I understand that Boise game was competitive. Oregon failed on a few fourth downs. Oregon outgained Boise by like 225 yards in that game. And I mean, in the second half, first half, it was 17-7 Boise. And it's like, okay, are they going to do this? Oregon scores right before halftime. And a 17-14 Boise at halftime, it's like, okay, Oregon's obviously going to win this game. And they did. They won out. I think it's a lot to ask in 1 week. The line, I think at one point in the offseason, was close to 17.5, 18.5. I saw it at 22.5 earlier in the week. It's now up to 23. I really even kind of think it's a big ask to ask Oklahoma State to cover the 23. Oregon has two defensive tackles who are going to be first or second day draft picks, probably two defensive ends who are going to be first or second day draft picks. And what is Oklahoma State's front really going to do with those guys? And Carson, we're going to talk here in a minute about how you can maybe try to coach around that. But I think Oregon is going to be too talented all across the field to really coach around that. So I think things can change. I think this team can get better. I think this team will be better at the situational stuff. I think Morris will be better. I think Mestemaker will be better. Do I think that they're getting to the 8 wins that I predicted preseason? No, I don't. Do I think they could still get to 6? Yeah, I do. But we're going to have to see some improvement. But yeah, what are your thoughts on what they can try to do against Oregon specifically? Because those four down linemen, they're going to make it really difficult on Oklahoma State up front.
Yeah, and like you haven't even mentioned the quarterback. They have a top 5 pick at quarterback too, who was graded the most. I think he was the best deep ball thrower in the country last year. Better than Mestemaker. And so I'm going to show some clips here from Oregon's offense. And when you ask me, like, Carson, what are they going to do? They can't block. Look at the offensive line right here. This is a tie game, third quarter. This play gets all the way down inside the 10-yard line. It's a simple wide receiver delayed screen. You let the defensive lineman get upfield. They're out of the play, essentially. And now you have basically a 2-on-1 situation with the first guy, and then he just bumps it outside and makes a guy – you utilize your skill, talent, and your speed here. Very simple play design. So, like, when I watched Oregon, Colby, against Boise, it wasn't their offensive line just road grading through Boise. Even when they had really long run plays, there was a lot of pre-snap motion, like you've mentioned, and they got the edge. The lack of Oklahoma State getting the edge in the rushing game was just night and day. This is a touchdown play. 6 minutes left to go in third quarter, tie game. Really just simple drop back. Simple wide receiver screen. It's basically another just one-on-one situation. You got the guy blocking the other guy, and it's one-on-one, and he takes it to the pylon and scores. Like, this is what you and I, Colby, were begging for throughout the KC Dunn era. If you can't just blow up people, look at their offensive line. They're moving backwards against Boise. And some of that's by design. As you can see, these guys releasing out here, the left tackle releases out to the flat. This is simple pitch and catch where you let your skill talent gain easy 5-6 yards from the jump, and then these Oregon players are able to turn it into 50 and 60 yard gains at times. Another play here, just drop, like, shotgun snap, turn, throw. It's out. You're out of the box that you cannot block that has been just a Caleb K says the screen's frozen, Carson. This is not video. These are still photos because it tells the whole story, and I don't want to get flagged by YouTube either.
Exactly. Yep.
But another play here. Tie game, 30 seconds left to go in the third quarter. This one went for, I believe, 30 yards. Just these were all chunk plays, at least 20 to 30 yards minimum. The one play that was a touchdown was like 10 to 15. But that is the key, Colby. I'm not saying you just run Oregon's playbook. But as you can see there, Oregon realized we're not going to just run for 200 yards against Boise. How do we get our skill talent out in space with some hats in front of them to where if they make one guy miss, it's 50 yards. And that's so if you're sitting there going, Carson, their offensive line's terrible. They're going to win five games. Well, I think there's ways to scheme around your offensive line. And Oregon did a really good job of that when the chips were down against Boise. When they had to have it, what did they go to? They went to simple pitch and catch out wide, outside the hash marks, easy pitch and catch.
Yeah, and a couple of thoughts off that. Number one, I do think against Oregon, one way you can try to coach around the fact that their defensive line is going to have a Grand Canyon-sized gap in terms of talent from their D-line to your O-line. Like, the advantage is there for Oregon. How do you coach around that? You play the entire game outside the hashes. Like, you get the ball outside the numbers as quickly as possible, and you don't allow those guys to operate in that space. Whenever you want to get a throw down the field to make Oregon respect you, you have your offensive lineman block down left. You roll best to make her out right. You just buy an extra 2 seconds for guys to get down the field just so you can just throw it as far as you can, Drew, and let's back those safeties off a little bit. And another thing, your receivers have to get out there and they have to block. And you notice I said receivers, not tight ends, not cowboy backs. Carson, I'm ready to fire the entire position into the sun. Let's give the scholarships to baseball. I've had about enough of watching cowboy backs be used as well because they're not used to catch the ball. And again, Carson Cobb was open one time in the game against Tulsa. Mestemaker missed him, sure. But this is not just this game against Tulsa problem. For a decade now, they've not been used to catch the ball. They've been used as blockers who have not been blocking very well. They're like, well, we have to have an extra blocker in. If you need an extra blocker in on fourth and one outside the right tackle, send Carson Cobb to the sideline. You've got six offensive linemen. Let's bring in the sixth offensive lineman. Maybe he's not your best offensive lineman, but maybe he weighs 330 pounds and he's not getting put on his back as soon as the ball snaps. So, to me, I think you get the ball outside the numbers as much as possible and as quick as possible against Oregon. I think you have a bunch of plays dialed up for Mestemaker where the ball hits his hands and it comes out. If you're going to keep him in the pocket, it needs to be turnarounds, it needs to be crossers, it needs to be things that are happening quick. Anything that takes more time to develop, I think we need to see what Mestemaker looks like on the move. I think asking him to take the snap, take a three-step drop, put his back foot in the ground, and fire 25 yards down the field, I don't think you're going to be able to do that against Oregon. So I think you're going to have to get creative with the way you block up front to send Oregon's defensive line one direction so Mestemaker can go the other direction anytime you want to throw the ball down the field. And other than that, I want Hawkins getting out wide. Like, I don't want Hawkins standing next to Mestemaker in the shotgun, and you take the snap, and you give it to him, and he runs into the back of the left guard. I saw enough of that against Tulsa to know it's not going to work against Oregon. It's going to be second and 10. It's going to be third and 9. Why do we live in third and 9? I mean, come on, Carson. What are we doing? They're making me ad-lib. We're one game into the season, and they're making me ad-lib over. So, come on now. Let's go. Oregon, I'm not gonna be able to.
I can't go 3-9 again. I can't do it.
I'm not gonna be able to take it if I have to watch them give the ball to Hawkins and run in between the guards all day against Oregon of all teams. I'm not gonna be able to take it.
No, it's a great point. It's what I was kind of getting at. And the two plays I didn't mention, two of their touchdowns were deep throws over the middle of the field. And I think that's a byproduct of what you're saying. Of in a lot of those plays I showed were delayed screens where you let the D-line kind of get upfield a little bit and it's out and they're completely nullified. And so that's what they got to do that. And I'm shocked we didn't see more of that once the game was turned against them against Tulsa. Once they were in a hole and had to dig their way out of it, I'm shocked that they didn't do more of that. But look, Eric Morse knows a lot about football, obviously. He knows how to coach offensive football. And I think we're going to see a much different game plan. I think we're going to see a much more innovative game plan against Oregon. Whether that's enough, probably not. I mean, Oregon's really, really, really freaking good. And so I was going to do the Chris's University Spirit uniform preview, but Oklahoma State has already tweeted out the uniform combination for Saturday. And I got to give a round of applause to Justin Southwell on the Reload podcast. He hammered home this point, and Marshall and Nathan were kind of like, dude, why do you care so much about this? But it's he's totally right on this. Like, OSU is the only school that doesn't tweet out their uniforms during the week to where all the uniform accounts on Twitter talk about it. You get a lot more, there's a lot more talk about your school and your awesome uniforms when you post it early. OSU has still been stuck in this, well, we want our holder and our kicker to run out there, and then everyone will know what we're wearing, and we're going to debut a new helmet. Well, it's been a long time since they've been debuting new things to where that's just a thing of the past. So I think Justin Southwell kind of like pressured them into this, and I love it because now we know what it is. It's white, orange, white, Patriot Pete on the helmet. That was actually going to, I swear that was going to be my prediction, but who really cares at this point? They're 0-1. But yeah, credit to Southwell. He got some real change up there in Stillwater to occur.
Yeah, I love that they're doing this. I wish they would have dropped it tomorrow morning. I was going to go white, orange, white, but I would have gotten the helmet wrong. I was going to go Curse of Cowboys on the helmet. I knew they weren't going to wear anything dark. It's just this is probably going to be your last mega hot game that you're going to play. So you knew it would be something light, but they're not going white jerseys with the home team. So I was going to go white, orange, white with the Curse of Cowboys on the side. I nailed it last week, Carson. The Icy Whites with the brand, 1-for-1. Even got the helmet logo right. So
not the only thing we got right. Week one. I had to put this comment up. Ethan E2 show cattle. He must show some cattle there. Carson and Colby, longtime listener of the pod here. Real question is, who is Wyndham Clark rooting for on Saturday? I forgot this was the Wyndham Clark Bowl.
Oh, the Wyndham.
Started his golfing career at OSU. We had that debate on do we count as majors, and there's an emphatic yes by the end of it, now that he's won two. He went to Oregon after Oklahoma State. It's the Wyndham Clark Bowl. I wonder if he'll make an appearance.
Yeah, it's a great question. He could show up with the jersey cut down the middle, sewed together, half green, half orange. I don't know if he wants to have a good time. He's obviously going to be rooting for Oregon. If he really loves us and really has us deep in his heart, he'll be rooting for Oklahoma State. So, I imagine he'll watch what takes place on Saturday and think, you know what? I love both places, but good for my football school for doing what they're doing football wise. Yeah, I mean, I think if you put the truth serum in Wyndham, he'd say, look, Oregon has a chance to do something really special this year. Oklahoma State, maybe not so much. So let's go ahead and quack quack on Saturday. But the Wyndham Clark question gives me a great chance to talk about one of our great sponsors, Echo Contracting, who is a proud sponsor of the Pistols Firing podcast, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com, and head over to Twitter, the Twitter machine, follow at Echo Contracting. They've got some golf balls to give away. If you're a golfer, they're giving away Echo branded Pro V1s, giving away a box of them. You've got to pick the winner of the game and give a score. Closest wins. They've got tiebreakers. If all the tiebreakers tie, we'll coin flip. It says coin flip, cage match, TBD. So go follow at Echo Contracting on Twitter. I've retweeted the tweet and submit your score predictions. Carson, they've got extras to give away. They thought they'd be giving away 12 or 13 dozen golf balls this year, and that went down by a dozen after the Tulsa game because there were many, many comments on that post, and no one predicted Tulsa to win the game. If even one person would have thought, you know what, I'm going to gain leverage on the field, and I'm going to pick Tulsa to win this game by any score, they would have won a dozen golf balls. Last week, no one picked Tulsa, and this week, I'd be shocked if one person picks Oklahoma State.
Yeah, maybe that's the move. Maybe you fade the field like last week and pick the underdog. Maybe if you pick Oklahoma State, you'll win. You'll take them home because you'll be the only one after what we saw. Yeah. So I guess let's get to the game this week, Colby. Look, Oklahoma State. We weren't going to pick them to win this game regardless of what happened against Tulsa. But I do think the Tulsa loss makes this even more doom and gloom. And I did find it interesting that Drew Mestemaker has been very online. He's been commenting on some outraged OSU fans posts saying it's going to be different next week. And then look, I think Mestemaker and Morris and everyone involved has handled this the right way. like Mike Gundy, by the end of his tenure, was gaslighting us and trying to tell us everything was fine. And they didn't do that. So it's credit to them. But I am way past talk when it comes to a new coach, a new regime, and really just following OSU football as long as I have. You got to show me. Like, you got to show me the stuff that I believed in going into the Tulsa game. All the things we've talked about with the offense that went wrong. Drew Mestemaker missing wide open receivers. Like, Wyatt Young is a really good receiver. Miles Coleman is an awesome receiver. Bowick has a lot of potential. He even caught a touchdown against Tulsa. Like, you got to give the fans and everyone watching something to believe in that first half. If it's just what we saw last year up in Oregon, that will be really harmful for the rest of the year's crowds, I think. You got to keep this game somewhat competitive to keep people bought into something that, like, you mentioned it was like deflating last week, like that all the air went out of the balloon last week. I think it'd be even worse, even though you're playing a much better team. Like, if you're just not competitive again, Colby, like, it's gonna be hard to rope people back in the rest of the way. It really will.
I think the biggest game of the season might fall in week four at West Virginia, because that's your chance to start conference play 1-0 going into the bye and give your fans a reason to think that you can right the ship. I don't know that Saturday is that. If the miracle happens and they win the game, obviously we'll have a very different conversation. If they keep it competitive, my preseason prediction for this game was 41-24 Oregon. I mean, that would feel like a smash at this point after what happened against Tulsa last week. What did you think of Mestemaker replying to stuff on social media? I got to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of that after the dud in week one. To me, it's just, I don't know. I'm not really here for the social media will be better. It won't be like that again. Talk like, sure, it's all fine and well. I'd rather you just go show me. I don't know. Just that just to me, that reads as a young person who is plugged into what people are saying about them on the internet, who is bothered by it, and who is trying to write a different narrative. And I don't know. It just, I didn't love it. I don't want to sit here and crush the kid for it or anything. He's a young kid. Young kids are online. I get it. But I didn't just absolutely love it. I'm kind of in much more of a show me state, kind of like you are. We're Florida, Carson. We're in a show me state. So yeah, I don't know. I wasn't crazy about it.
Well, according to Parker Chapman, he said his girlfriend said it wasn't him. This is turning into like Ferris Bueller. Like, my girlfriend's cousin's friend said Ferris is sick. You haven't seen Ferris Bueller, probably.
No, I haven't.
So who knows if it was really him or not? I don't know. But I really don't have a problem with it. But if it was him, like, it does open you up to more criticism. I think it's only negative can come from it. If you better back it up, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And look, I was 19, 21 years old at one point, and I probably would have commented on posts. And it wasn't even negative. It's not like if it was right. Him or not, it's not like they said, F you, dude. It was just like, we'll be better next week. So I don't really have any issue with it. And
okay. We've got multiple.
I think if you don't produce.
And it wasn't him, so.
Okay. So fake account. Carry on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do think whether he commented on it or not, I do think he is feeling the pressure. You saw that against Tulsa. He missed throws he should never miss because he was feeling the pressure. And he was brought in to beat teams like Oregon. He was brought in to compete for a Big 12 championship. And through 1 week, a lot of people who have never watched you play are not big believers in you as a quarterback. And so that's the hard thing about college football, Colby. It's not like golf where the first round sucked and you're back at it the next day. No, you got to wait a whole week. You got to let people like you and I discuss all the things that went wrong all week. And then you got to go play the number two. I still think the second best team in the country in Oregon, whether they rank sixth, I don't really care. I think it's ridiculous they got moved down. But make no mistake, he's feeling the pressure, and he should, because this is big boy football. You're not in Tulsa's conference anymore. This is the Big 12. And every single week, you got to produce, and especially when you're getting the salary that you're getting as well.
Yeah, and that matters these days, and it frames these conversations a little bit differently. I think when I started doing this podcast with you, I think I was probably a bit more gentle in terms of player mistakes on the field, and I think it has changed the way I talk about this stuff a little bit, knowing that some of these guys are making seven figures and a bunch of them are making six figures, and yeah, it definitely shapes the narrative a little bit. We got people in the comments asking here, Art. Tim Orange, numbers, letters, talking about Tracy Moore and his comments. And yeah, it's just Tracy Moore, if you didn't see it, he posted about how he and his brothers fought for these colors and this logo and this brand for free, and they built something, and they've had to watch it come crashing down, and you don't need to put that uniform on if you're not wearing it with pride. And I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but I loved what Tracy Moore had to say. And yeah, I think it has to be really painful for one of those players who played at any point between like 2008, really 2007 and 2017. I mean, I could even say between 2007 and 2023. I could say any of the guys who played in that 16 or 17 year span have to have watched what's happened the last 24 months with their jaws on the floor, just in amazement. I mean, it's been, what, 378 days now since Oklahoma State has won a game, and it's been almost two calendar years since Oklahoma State beat an FBS opponent. UT Martin's an FCS school that Oklahoma State barely beat week one of last year and struggled to move the ball after Haas Haney went out. I mean, 2 years since you've beaten an FBS program. I like that Tracy Moore came out and said something. I think that, past players who have pride in this program have to feel as frustrated as the rest of us do as fans, more frustrated. Like Tracy Moore said, they weren't getting NIL. They weren't getting paid. Nobody was making seven figures on that team. Nobody got rich catching touchdowns on that team. So, I didn't have a problem at all with what Tracy said. I liked it.
Yeah, like if I'm Tracy Moore, it's like I helped build this house, this mansion, this sparkling – I helped build this thing from the ground up. And now I've got a bunch of renters living there who aren't cutting their grass. The grass looks ridiculous. They haven't mowed. They haven't upkept the house. And they've taken all the money from the house, and they haven't put any money back in. And that's basically what Tracy Moore is saying, is you guys are destroying this house that we all built through blood, sweat, and tears and weren't paid a dime for. So I would be totally pissed if I was Tracy Moore. I'd be pissed if I was Brandon Whedon. All these guys that have played there, they're embarrassing their school for three straight years now. Like, the idea of losing to Tulsa for a guy like Tracy Moore, who's from Tulsa, played at Union, that has to just go all over him. That has to just be like, what the hell's going on up there? I thought we spent all this money on this quarterback who couldn't hit me right now, and I'm not even in playing shape if I'm Tracy Moore, you know? Like, it's ridiculous. And so I think that's kind of the concern now, Colby. And I think this is a point I meant to make on the show last week, that, boy, I did not expect to be making anything close to this point through one game this year. So when Eddie Sutton was and Sean Sutton had went through and their tenures were over and Travis Ford took over, like, I always viewed the Oklahoma State job when OSU basketball was at its zenith. Like, I viewed Gallagher Arena as a facility and a program. The basketball program was, I thought, the second best program in the Big 12 besides Kansas. When you factored in fan support, the arena, OU had more on-court success, but I thought OSU was a better basketball job. That take has not aged well. OSU basketball has been stuck in this now 25-year quagmire.
Not quite that long, but yeah, 20 year.
When's the last time they won a tournament game?
2008? They went to the Final 2009? Four in 2004. 25 years ago would have been 2001. They went to the Final Four in 2004. So, okay. Yeah. Eight, 18, 20 years, something like that.
It's felt like 30.
Yeah.
And so I think that's my fear now, is football going to be the same thing as we've seen now with basketball, where your legendary coach moves on and you think there's all this untapped potential waiting in the wings for the next coach? And you just start cycling through coaches and you don't win. And I know it's not the perfect example, because Gundy was a part of the last 2 years of beating nobody. But I do wonder if I've overestimated how good of a football job. You and I talked a lot about that when they were looking for a head coach, of what a good job we thought this was. And man, I know it's just one game, it's one loss to Tulsa, but I'm a little fearful now this might go the same way basketball did. I'm a little on edge, so to speak.
It has at least entered my mind that it's within a reasonable range of outcomes for what happens to Oklahoma State football. We have fallen off to a point that, you know, mid 20 teens, Kansas would be laughing at us. And that's, I mean, that's tough. We got to take a look in the mirror and realize where we're at. It was one loss. It was one game to Tulsa. All of our priors that we had on this team all summer and everything, all that stuff still exists. We're going to have to see it. Obviously, at this point, we're now no longer just believing it. We no longer just have faith in this team. I think that we have hope, but hope and faith are two different things. I had faith in this team in August. In September, I've got nothing but hope. I hope it gets better. I hope they look good. You know, I hope that they compete with Oregon. I hope that they beat West Virginia in week four. yeah, Carson, I think it's possible that this goes really badly, but I'm not ready to go there yet. After one game against Tulsa, it was a painful, painful game. But there are really, really, like, slap you in the face, obvious ways, coaching-wise and players-wise, that you can be infinitely, infinitely better. And I did not feel that way for most of last season. In 2024, I was just really confused. Reigning Big 12 runner-ups, 3-0 in the non-con. You beat Arkansas, Taylen Green. You steamroll Tulsa, Alan Bowman's the national player of the week, and then you lose 9 in a row. That was just dizzying. I just didn't know what was happening. Felt like my brain was ping-ponging around in my head trying to figure it out. It made no sense. Last year, I saw a college football team that was totally devoid of talent, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, and had no chance to improve as the season went along. It was blatantly obvious by about week four, probably, that they weren't winning another game. Maybe earlier than that. Maybe it might have been as blatantly obvious. I remember my parents were overseas. Some vacation they were on, and whenever the Oregon game was played. And I was texting them, and I was just saying, like, this is really bad. It's going to be really bad all year. I don't know if they're winning a game or not. Like, it might just be UT Martin. And, you know, my dad texted me, and he's like, so negative. I mean, how can you say that? Oregon's obviously great. It's a bad day. And then, like, 2 weeks later, we were watching a game together, and he's like, yeah, I kind of get it now. He's like, I kind of get what you meant, that Oregon game. I didn't get to watch it. And I don't feel that way about this year's team. I don't feel like this is a team devoid of talent. I don't feel like this is a team that can't get better. I feel like this is a team that can get better, a team that does have talent on it. So if you told me today, Colby, you have to put a number on it. I'm putting 6-6 on it and an improved team as the season goes along. But Carson, week four at Morgantown, you're either telling your fan base you need to be in for the rest of the year, or you're telling your fan base Thunder season starts in 2 weeks. That's what you're telling your fan base when you make that trip to Morgantown.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I was somewhat optimistic after in our post-game show, is like this team is not this poor. Like, last year's team put more yards up against Tulsa and more points. Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I think it was just a case where it was one of those snowball games where every single thing that could have gone wrong went wrong. And a large part of that is credit to Tulsa. They out-schemed them, out-coached them. And a large part of it is just due to, like, simple football. Like, simple football escaped them for whatever reason. And I don't think it's going to escape them the whole year. I really don't.
What do you make of Oklahoma State played 65 players in that game on Saturday. Tulsa played 45. So Oklahoma State was deeper. They were rotating more guys in that heat on the turf. And Eric Morris said on Tuesday, yeah, we weren't in good enough shape. They were in better shape. We were gassed in the fourth quarter. We looked like a team with no energy. We had guys throwing up on the sideline. Like, I was like, okay, you know, he's not beating around the bush. He's calling a spade a spade. He's telling it like it is. But that was a little bit jarring to know that we played, you know, 1.5 times the amount of players that they did. And our guys, even with all those rotations, couldn't hang. I mean, I have we gotten too fancy? Are we practicing in this nice indoor building? Tulsa doesn't have a nice indoor building. You know what they're doing on Tuesday afternoons? They're out there when it's 105 degrees getting killed. That's what they're doing on Tuesday afternoons. And it showed on Saturday afternoon. I was disappointed in the energy level of the team Saturday. And it was confirmed Tuesday when Coach Morris said, yeah, we weren't in nearly good enough shape.
Well, that's even more embarrassing than the result, frankly. And I guess they've practiced in the morning a lot too. Now you're able to do that now with, you know, online classes and all those things. And they were probably indoors too much. And that's even more embarrassing in my opinion. And hey, maybe maybe Rob Glass's salary was worth over $1 million. You know, we harped on that for a while, but boy, sure looks like they miss Rob Glass all of a sudden if they're throwing up week one, playing up in Chapman Stadium in Tulsa on 160-degree turf. And it's not going to be any cooler this week. 94, I think, is the high on Saturday. They are playing at 11 a.m., which will help, not 2:30. But I thought that was going to be an advantage for Oklahoma State, but maybe not. So I think that's alarming. Like, alarm bells should be going off at every level in that building, just from the quarterback to your conditioning. Literally everything that could go wrong went wrong. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how they come out against Oregon, really. I'm not sitting here advocating that they run a bunch of double reverse passes and just throw kitchen sink. It shouldn't be a kitchen sink game. It should be run plays that you're confident in, run your playbook, and don't do this phone booth offense that we've seen for 3 years. And that's what I want to see. I want to see innovative North Texas offense, and we didn't get to see it through one game. So what's your score pick? I liked your original score pick. I probably wouldn't go too far from that.
41-24 was my original pick. I watched that game against Tulsa. I watched it back. I studied Oregon a bit. I looked at the talent that they have on the defensive side of the ball. And maybe Coach Morris makes a lot of changes. They're able to practice with some other guys at left tackle, get that solidified a little bit. You're still going to get beat up front. Maybe they coach around all those things. Maybe they play the entire game outside the tackles, outside the numbers, and they're able to move the ball a little bit and put some points on the board. But I can't predict that because I cannot show back up Saturday evening having been too bullish on Oklahoma State again after what I watched this past Saturday. I'm going to leave Oregon where I had them at 41. I don't think they're getting to 69 like they did last year against Oklahoma State. I'm going to leave Oregon at 41 where I predicted them before the season. They've got a new offensive coordinator. Will Stein obviously moved on to Kentucky, so they've got a new OC. I'm going to leave them at 41. I'm docking Oklahoma State 2 touchdowns off my preseason prediction. I've got it 41-10 Oregon covering.
Oof. Yeah, I don't hate that. I actually think Oklahoma State's going to score some in this game, but I'm very, very concerned about the secondary. So watching Oregon, Jeremiah McClellan looks like an NFL player today. He's just a freakazoid. Evan Stewart. Jeremiah McClellan's number 3. So if you see number 3 catching a lot of balls, don't be surprised. And DeCorian Moore, number 1, he had that great touchdown where he hit the brakes, let 2 Boise State guys tackle each other, and then took it to the house for the go-ahead score. Just a total speedster. And Evan Stewart. So Evan Stewart and McClellan are both 6 feet tall at receiver. I'm just envisioning a lot of downfield throws that they're just winning one-on-one with OSU secondary. And I think that'll be the difference in the game as far as the receivers versus OSU secondary. I think might get a little ugly. So I'm going to go 52-24 Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State will score in this game. I think they're going to have much better schemes, and I think they're going to show a lot better that they have some real skill talent, and they have to be put in positions to succeed. And I think Eric Morris had to do a lot of soul searching this week. I think he was embarrassed that this was his debut, getting really played off the field by Tulsa. Like that game could have been way out of hand, way more than it was. So I think he'll scheme up some really good plays, score some points early. But I don't think Oklahoma State's defense, who played really well against Tulsa, I don't want to lose sight of that. 1 of 11 on third down conversions, they got off the field. But as you saw, when Tulsa challenged them down the field, it led to good things. And I think Oregon's going to do a lot of that on Saturday. So that's my score.
Yeah, I think you're right. And we should say, West77 says we have to create turnovers or it'll get ugly. So, Carson, what does it look like if Oklahoma State is competitive? Let's just allow ourselves to drift off into that hypothetical. I think turnovers is obviously a big one. If somehow you create chaos, or you know, you just have a linebacker come in and punch a ball, ball pops out, goes to one of your safeties, and he returns it to the house. A muff punt by Oregon, like fluky things can happen sometimes in football games. So if Oklahoma State beats Oregon, it would obviously be a fluke outcome. The way you get to a fluke outcome is through a series of fluke things happening throughout the day. Bad turnovers by Oregon. You know, Dante Moore stares down a receiver, Mo Horn undercuts it, pick 6, something like that. Turnovers to me is about the only way that Oklahoma State pulls off the miracle here. And I'm talking, Oregon's a really, really talented team. They have a bunch of guys playing on Saturday who will play on Sundays. I think you win the turnover battle by three or more. And then maybe you win the special teams battle. Maybe Oregon misses a field goal. You make all yours. Like, that to me is the recipe for Oklahoma State being competitive in this game. You've got to win the turnover battle, and you've got to win it significantly.
I think you basically flip what happened to you against Tulsa. So Dan Lanning has long been one of the biggest proponents for going forward on fourth down. They were 0 for 3 on fourth down against Boise. Boise was 2 of 3. I think that's why you saw that game so condensed. That's a big factor in why Boise was able to keep that game close. So I think while Oregon did, you mentioned it, Oregon had 497 yards to Boise's 274. I think what Boise did is the recipe. You got to stop them, and Oregon was only 4 of 12 on third down. So third and fourth down defense, which was very good, at least for third down's sake for OSU. If you're able to replicate some of that third down success against Oregon and then get those timely stops, I think Dan Lanning's not going to want to kick a lot of field goals in this game. I think he's going to go for it if he's across the halfway line, the midfield line. And so that kind of what you're speaking of about turnovers, I think those money downs is where this game is going to be either total blowout Oregon or, hey, wow, Oklahoma State's keeping this game close. The crowd's into it. Wow, nobody saw this coming after what happened to Tulsa. Like, that's the recipe for me.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's just, it's got to be chaos. It's got to be a series of fluke events that leads to a fluke outcome. And if that happens, then we'll be recording a little bit later in the evening, because that means I was at Boone Pickens Stadium until 2:30. There are scenarios in which I leave Boone Pickens Stadium at 12:30, and there are scenarios in which I am at Boone Pickens Stadium until 2:30. So we'll see what happens. I need to see the horse run, Carson. I've been telling a four-year-old for 9 months that we're going to get to see the horse run. Come on, Bullet. Get out there. Eric Morris, think of the kids. Eric Morris, Drew Mestemaker, think of the kids. They love the horse.
Sports comedy hip-hop. Carson predicted this to be a seven-point loss right before the season started. What is he predicting now? How about this sports comedy hip-hop? Bullet's going to run on the opening kickoff. Oklahoma State's going to return the opening kick for a touchdown. How about that, sports comedy hip-hop? If I get that right, sports comedy hip-hop, you have to reveal your real name and not be a loser with some silly – because I've been seeing you in the comments being a little – being a troll. So post your name and who you are and what a jabroni you really are if you really want to come at me. How about that? If Oklahoma State returns the opening kickoff, you got to expose yourself. Not that. You got to tell us your name.
That's funny. That's good stuff. Carson, we – exposed ourselves a little bit by waiting until the very end of the show before we mentioned our latest, greatest sponsor. Farm Service Company is a real estate brokerage spanning three generations of Oklahoma State graduates in Chickasha, America. They offer farm management for non-resident landowners, farm and ranch appraisal, and farm and ranch sales. Check out farmservicerealestate.com for more information. Love the good people in Chickasha. Carson, we can try to end on a more positive note after this. But something pretty depressing happened really early in the NFL game tonight, and I didn't know if you saw it. It involved a former Cowboy.
I've got DeJuan Stribling on one of my fantasy teams, so I got a Yahoo alert that he's out. What happened?
Well, you're going to have an open roster spot next week, so you got that going for you.
Oh, no.
I am not a doctor. I am not a doctor. This is the Colby Powell diagnosis. I have no qualifications to make this diagnosis other than the amount of football that I've watched in my life. I don't think he's playing football again until September of 2027. He came out of a cut, took a couple of steps. His leg bent in a very awkward way at the knee, and then he collapsed, grabbed his knee, writhed in pain, and hobbled to the blue medical tent before being taken back to the locker room. He was the darling of the NFL offseason. He was the darling of the NFL preseason. He was set to be the wide receiver two for the San Francisco 49ers, a powerful Kyle Shanahan offense, a former Cowboy who had a real chance and a great situation in the NFL to make something happen as a rookie. And for it to come undone, and I think it was in the first quarter, I hate it, Carson. Obviously, this isn't a video game. I wish it was a video game and we could just turn injuries off and just watch all these guys play and have great careers and may the best man win, but that's not the reality. The reality is guys get hurt, and DeJuan Stribling got hurt, and it's a huge, huge bummer.
Well, they noted this on the Reload podcast. I had no idea. I should have connected these dots sooner, but Stribling was at Washington State when Eric Morris was.
Oh, yeah.
He was his receivers coach. So, like, there's a real connection there still in Stillwater with his former coach. That's a bummer. Everyone was predicting him to have a big year, and I guess the substation got him. You know, the San Francisco 49ers practice near a electric substation, and they've had just an innumerate amount of injuries over the years. And God, that's awful. I saw he hurt his ankle early in the game and came back in. They said he was cleared. I got like I was getting multiple Yahoo injury updates on my fantasy squad, and I guess he had another injury that was much more serious. That's a bummer. That's a real bummer.
So I did give it a search on Twitter. Non-contact, not a good angle. They're saying maybe Achilles. So best case scenario, calf strain. Just brutal, man.
You'd rather it be a torn knee than Achilles, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I will say
dudes come back from ACLs in like 4 months now.
Yeah, it's crazy how fast guys are coming back from ACLs. But, I mean, was Kittle's – I know we're just rambling right now, but was Kittle's an Achilles? Because he's back, and his was later in the year last year. So, I mean, guys are coming back from everything. I don't know.
Peptides, baby.
Wolverine, get you some more.
Those peptides.
I haven't gotten on the peptide deal so far. Maybe I should. I hurt my back. I shot my low round of the year last Friday at the Greens. I shot 68. I shot 68 with a four-putt double bogey. It's maybe the best I've hit it.
Humble brag.
For a full round. Oh, no, it wasn't meant to be humble. I striped it all day long. And then I hurt my back, and now I don't know when I'm going to be able to play golf again. I might have to get an MRI. Like, I'm in pain. It's brutal.
All right. Fire off your questions if you have any in the comments. Just last thing for me, Colby. Things I'm looking for Saturday, things I want to see. A man named Caleb Hawkins, that is.
Yeah.
Caleb Hawkins, not Michael, not Mike, Caleb. He's your best player. I think there was a lot of talk preseason, you know, offensive MVP, where everyone would naturally pick the quarterback, Drew Mestemaker. Like, if this offense is going to have any success, he has to be a huge, huge focal point. And I'm talking about receiving the ball as well, but getting him to the edge, getting him off tackle, not running him straight behind the center's butt and running into him. The offense looked so much different with him on the field versus off last week against Tulsa. They have to get him going early, get him involved in the throwing game as well. If he gets going early and is involved, I think this offense has a much, much better chance of keeping this game competitive. If not, if they're trying to rotate in the second and third string tailback again in big spots again, I'm going to be livid on our post-game show. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, I cannot bear the thought of watching 7, 8, 9 consecutive plays with Trey Page and Iowa Adeyi. And that's not meant to be a knock against those guys. That's meant to be a call out, a lookout for, a shout out to the idea that Caleb Hawkins, I mean, he's kind of supposed to be your Superman in that backfield. And maybe he was one of the guys that Coach Morris was referencing in terms of not being in as good a condition as they thought. It's entirely possible. I hope that's not the case, but I don't know. I went back and rewatched that game. He touched the ball 24 times. If you would have told me before the game he touches the ball 24 times in that heat, I probably would have said, okay, sounds about right. But I thought that he got too many low-value touches, and Trey Page and Iowa Day got too many high-value touches multiple times on fourth and one. You had Trey Page and Iowa Day taking the snap, taking the handoff. Trey Page, that's one that Trey Page picked up and then put the ball on the ground. You think Caleb Hawkins picks that up and holds onto the ball? I think it's entirely possible. I'd like to think that we live in a world where that happens. The one where Adeyi gets blown up, that was really a blown blocking assignment, either just flat out by Carson Cobb or by the entire offensive line. Right tackle goes left, should have gone right. We discussed it earlier. But yeah, I think the 24 touches was okay, but a lot of them were either first and 10 or second and 10 runs into the back of the left guard. And, you know, Johnny Dixon, he didn't have his best game. He got blown up off the ball a couple of times too. So if you're giving Page and Adeyi some of those carries to spell Hawkins a little bit, I need some more of the low-value touches to go to those guys, and I need the swing points in the game. I need your best players on the field, and I need Caleb Hawkins touching the ball in those moments.
Yep, and you got to get after Dante Moore. Like, you got to – look, he's mobile. OSU hasn't had the greatest success against mobile quarterbacks over the years, but you got to disrupt him. You got to get after him. I thought OSU really did rush 3-drop-8 a little too much at certain times against Tulsa. They generated very little pass rush. We didn't see a lot of James Williams in that game either. He made a play late. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot he was even on the team. I hadn't seen his number or name all game. So I hope to see more of him as well against Oregon. But make no mistake, it's an uphill fight. So it's going to be an interesting game. But really, the fact is, you have to like get right for West Virginia. You keep pointing to that game, and rightfully so, Colby. This game against Oregon, it's going to be what it is. And if you get blown out, that's probably expected at this point. But you have to find your identity offensively. That's probably the number one thing I'm struggling with. Like, were those plays with Carson Cobb out there just lighting it up in practice? Or were you going super vanilla? I lean more toward the vanilla than these are your money plays with a cowboy back out there muddying the waters. But any more questions, fire them off. Yeah, odds makers essentially said Oregon 40-17 based on the 23.5. And the 50, yeah, that's interesting. The total went down while the point spread went up, which is just a total, like, we don't believe at all in Oklahoma State anymore. So,
I'll say this on the Carson Cobb and just the general Cowboy back stuff. First play of the game against Tulsa, you come out, you're 5 wide, they're on their heels, you sling it out to Barnes, he gets 8 yards. A couple plays later, you're 4 wide, you sling it out to Young, he gets 9 yards. And then the rest of the game, we watched Carson Cobb. I don't know. I don't know. I need more 5 wide, and I need more 4 wide, and I need less. It's not about Carson Cobb. It's about the position and the role it serves in the offense. And it doesn't seem like you're getting more than what you're losing there, that you could have a running back or another receiver on the field. Parker Chapman says over under 10 inside zone plays into the back of the guards. I'm going under. I think they'll get more creative than that against a really good D-line after what a disaster it was Saturday against Tulsa. You going under there, Carson?
If it's not way under this, we can just pack up the show and just start talking about next year. If they try that again against Oregon of all teams, like, just pack it up. Eric Morris should just pack up his office and go, if that's the case. Who's this? Ross Greiton, do we score more than 10 points on Saturday? Colby said no. Colby, what's one course you want to play in your lifetime, perhaps, that you haven't played?
In my lifetime, yeah. So it'd have to be one that I haven't played. I would probably say the Old Course. When I was working for NBC, I went over there for a St. Andrews Collegiate, and I got to experience St. Andrews. I got to walk the Old Course twice. I got to walk the Jubilee Course twice, walk the town, you know, stayed at the hotel on the 18th, overlooking the sea and the Valley of Sin and the road hole and everything. And it was, for a total golf purist and nerd like me, it was just the experience of a lifetime. And to have the golf course right there and to not be able to play it was the tease of a lifetime. So, like, sure, I could say Augusta National or Cypress or Pine Valley or one of those places. But for me, it would be going back to Scotland and playing the course that I've gotten to walk a couple of times that just teased me with its absolute brilliance. It was built 500 years ago, and it's one of the greatest golf courses in the world with some of the greatest golf holes in the world. So, yep, I want to go rip a bomb over that hotel. So that's my answer. Let's go to Scotland.
Yeah, that would be on my list. I've played that a ton on Tiger Woods' video game back in the day. Used to just tear up the old course on there with Tiger. Orange numbers and letters. What's the biggest mismatch versus Oregon? I really think their D line against our O line. That's not inspiring a lot of confidence in me. All the skill players got to be on it with quick throws, like we talked about. Totally agree. Besides the offensive line mismatch, that I think would probably be number one for both of us. I'll speak for both of us there. It's kind of what I laid out. Like, those Oregon receivers, whew, our DBs are going to have their hands completely full. Now, I like LaDainian Fields. I like Mo Horn still. I thought he laid the wood a few times against Tulsa. I'm not sitting here saying they can't make plays either. I think it's going to be a hard fight. It's going to be one of those battles where everyone wins some. Just a matter of, does Oregon just overwhelm you by the end of it with their deep shots? Because, again, those two of their long touchdowns were just deep shots over the middle where with some crossing routes where there's some confusion with your secondary. And those guys are going to have to be on point, Colby. They're going to give up a lot of huge chunk plays.
Yeah, and it's the reason why both of us said, when asked about the over-under 10 inside zones into the back of the guards, if you and I are smart enough and the people watching the show are smart enough to realize that there is a huge mismatch, their defensive line, our offensive line, I'd like to think that Eric Morris and Sean Brophy have identified that, and I would like to think that they're going to coach around that and that they're not going to spend 3 hours running our weakness directly into the teeth of their strength. So, yeah, I do think that's the biggest mismatch, and I don't think the idea is, well, let's keep trying it until we break through. I think the idea is let's coach around it. So I'm disappointed, Carson. Nobody in the comments has asked how many selfies we think our head coach will take with the opposing fans before the game. It's a tradition. It's a tradition, Carson.
It's an Oregon tradition, isn't it? Look, I'm not here to beat up on Mike anymore. Come on now.
I don't care. It's been
we're 0 for 2 on our locks. I locked OSU last week. You locked Stanford against Miami. Let's go more national this week. I'm not going to pick. We could probably pick Oregon to cover. That might be safer, but I want to go nationally here.
I think Bryce Underwood's real bad, and I think Michigan's real bad, but I have a hard time wearing the things that I'm wearing and locking the Voldemort of college football. You go first while I look for a better option. I'm going to do everything I can to not lock the good folks down I-35.
Yeah, I probably should have done this before the show, but
I'll be honest with you, it was such a train wreck last week, and I was so focused on my rewatch and all my notes, I didn't have one prepared. That one immediately sticks out to me. OU is a 5-point favorite, and I think Michigan might just be bad. Like, I watched the second half of that game against Western Michigan, and the better team did not win that football game. Western Michigan was the better team. Bryce Underwood is not a good quarterback. He did not handle the questions about his job security well at all during the week. He looks totally rattled. I just am not a fan of anything happening with Michigan football. I think Kyle Whittingham's getting paid a lot of money to go up there and eventually be a punching bag whenever that all collapses in on itself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably taking OU as my lock. That seems like a lock. Why is that line 5.5? Maybe I'm just the Joe Schmo up in Vegas that looks at last week's results and says, that's a sure winner. But I know
I said that I was about to do it, but then I bailed.
Michigan's terrible. They're terrible. And I think OU is really good. I mean, I know that's a rough thing to say on this show, but I think their defense is awesome. And their offense has got way more firepower than Michigan's.
Let's just go to the game of the week. Disclaimer, this is for entertainment purposes only. Ohio State and Texas. Carson, last year, Arch Manning was a disaster. I didn't think Ohio State was real impressive in that game. They weren't real impressive in the playoff coming off their national championship the year prior. That game's in Austin. Give me the Horns minus the 1.5. Revenge game. I realize we just locked OU in Texas. That's disgusting. I'm mad at us. Why did we do that? It is what it is. I went to the biggest game of the week. I think Texas beats Ohio State at home. And if I think they beat them, why wouldn't I lay the 1.5? What are the odds they win that game 28-27? If they do, you just bury your head in your hands and tip your cap.
Yeah, I mean, you're picking the lesser, or you're picking the worst of the two evils between Ohio State and Texas. You got to pick somebody. That'll be a fun game to watch. But
yeah.
Hopefully Oklahoma State's fun to watch as well, Colby. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Only final thoughts is recording schedule Saturday. We will be around on Saturday. What time? Probably depends on how good the game is. If I'm out of the stadium by 12:30 and I shoot Carson a text, we'll watch the end of the game and we can come on at 3 o'clock, depending on your availability. If not, it'll be later in the day, probably closer to 5 o'clock, something in the evening. So, yeah, just keep an eye out for us on Twitter, and we will be back on sometime on Saturday with a recap. It won't be a Sunday show. It will be a Saturday show.
My one hope is that we're not coming on here wondering if Casey Dunn's still calling plays. Like, as long as we're not talking about that on Saturday, I'll be fine. It's, again, I feel like I've said this for 3 years now. Like, I can handle losing. I'm an Oklahoma State graduate. I've seen it my entire life. Like, my life will go on with OSU losing football games. It's when you don't really try all that hard to win the game. You run these pedestrian, predictable, terrible offensive plays, and that's just not the hallmark of OSU football, man. We are an air raid. Air raid is in our blood. It's in our DNA. And I want to see some air raid freaking football against Oregon.
I love
probably
it.
Probably going to lose by 3 or 4 touchdowns, but at least make Oregon earn it. That's all I ask. So hopefully we're talking about something else besides that on Saturday.
Yeah, I love it. I do have one other thought. Listeners, viewers, y'all are the best. We have the best listeners, the best viewers. This audience has grown over the years. We had 150 people earlier. It's almost 10 o'clock on a Thursday night. We've still got more than 100 people hanging out with us. And between the views on YouTube and the audio listens, we had more than 20,000 people listen to our last episode. We had nearly 18,000 views on YouTube, several thousand more on the audio side. And it's just really, really amazing, really humbling. And we just, we love you guys. Y'all are why we do this. We love the interaction on YouTube during the shows. We love all the comments. I went through and read all the comments on YouTube throughout the week, all the tweets. It's a great way to be a part of the Oklahoma State athletics community. And we just, I just wanted to express a deep, deep gratitude for our listeners because it makes it a whole lot of fun.
And I would echo everything Colby just said. You guys are absolutely incredible. I'm blown away, frankly, at how many people tuned into that show despite the result. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up probably my favorite YouTube comment I've ever received from CP Swanson 1. He posted this on our post-game show after the Tulsa loss. He said, "There's an armadillo smiling down from heaven as he listens to this podcast," which is just deep cut, hilarious. We talked about the armadillo hunting with his camo hat with Eric Morris. So hopefully OSU gets the better of the Ducks. And way more so than the armadillo who got the last laugh after the Tulsa game. So
yeah,
appreciate all of you. Colby, appreciate you. And hopefully we have something fun to talk about on Saturday. We'll talk then.
Absolutely. I'll be in the West End Zone Saturday. Come say hi if you see me. Thanks, everyone, for being with us late on a Thursday night. Everyone who watches and listens, thank you as always. Go Pokes!